Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. In this episode, I am joined by Fox play-by-play guy and host of the Clubhouse podcast, Shane Bacon. Before we get into our discussion, I'd like to ask you all to head over to our brand new YouTube page. It's under The Fried Egg, and be sure to check out our latest videos. Now, without further ado, here's Bacon and the Fried Egg.
The fried egg requires a different technique. What you need to do is actually square the face so it'll dig down underneath that bad lie and propel that ball right out onto the green.
Here's the thing. Playing out of a buried lie in a bunker is completely different than playing out of a nice, clean lie in a greenside bunker.
You need to be aggressive on any shot, whether it's sitting cleanly or it's a fried egg.
Well, we've all faced it, the dreaded fried egg. Not to be feared, though. It's actually a pretty easy shot to hit.
So you're the original gangster golf blogger.
Oh, I like that.
I don't think a lot of people know that.
Well, I mean, it's like there was, Ryan Ballingy was kind of an OG. There was this thing called the Sand Trap. I'm trying to think of some other golf blogs that were kind of
Hacker's
around.
Paradise.
Yeah, Hacker's Paradise was around. We had Stephanie Way came around after a little bit of me kind of rocking and rolling. But yeah, I was I actually had a buddy of mine, my buddy Andrew. When we got out of college, I wrote for the student newspaper, and he was like, "Yo, man, you should like write now on the internet." And I was like, all right. I actually wrote major championship previews for Deadspin back in the Will Leach days, which is pretty OG. I think I wrote some stuff for like Sports by Brooks too, but I hope that there's no archives for that because I would hate to see what it looked like.
Was that Brooks Koepka's publication?
Yeah. That was like before he realized his potential, he had this great blog and it was awesome. It was a must read. Yeah, that was those are the days, man. I had a desk in my bedroom. It was so nice. That's where all the magic happened.
you literally woke up and, you know, instead of a basement, instead of your parents' basement, it was just a one bedroom office sleeping quarters.
the ground in Phoenix is too hard to dig down to, so they just instead of having the basement, I just had an attached desk in my room. Actually, my same buddy, Andrew, the one that I was telling you, complained. Him and I were living together, and he gave me the bigger bedroom because he was like, "You're the loser that stays at home and writes all the time, so you can have the bigger room." I was like, "Thank you, sir."
When you're writing and when you were just blogging and doing this for all these different sites, when did you know that you were kind of like set and locked in with golf for the rest of your life?
Man, the rest of my life. Don't say that.
You might move on to bigger and better things.
No, but. No. I wrote when I first got my job with AOL Fan House. I wrote almost every sport. I didn't write a lot of baseball, but I wrote. It was kind of one of those things when stuff came across the wire, which I know that sounds like a super old term, but you know, like when Tiger did something or some breaking news came out about this. Basically, it was kind of it was first. Person to email our listserv, I got this story, got it. And if you got a really popular post, you actually got a little bit of a bonus. So, dude, I would just sit around all the time, and just kind of be around the computer, just looking. So, I mean, NFL stories, all that stuff. But I knew fairly on that golf was probably the best avenue, just because I felt like I knew it the best. And I'd had kind of some cool opportunities throughout my life within the game that I don't think a lot of people have. So, yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to do it. And so I gradually kind of navigated over there. And then when I got a chance to kind of write for the Yahoo blog and then eventually edit it and go to CBS Eye on Golf, that was kind of when I realized that this was probably the sport that I should focus most of my attention on because it seemed to be the one that was that kind of – I don't know. People listen to me about. I don't know if that makes sense. They kind of listen to me about it. I don't know. I mean, I still get people that call me Sean. I got called Sean twice on air this year. Sean Bacon twice. Go back to Sean. I was like, that's close enough.
Well, they didn't even know Brooks Koepka's name during the final round.
Don't feel bad.
That's exactly right.
He's just won two major championships.
You know what, though? There's a level of kind of being like, I'm kind of okay with people maybe not knowing my name like that. You know, like, I see these really famous people, not to say like I'm going to ever be famous or even on that path, but like, I see famous people, and the fame thing is so weird that like, it's kind of nice when like somebody you're working with says your name wrong. You're like, nice. I'm just, you know, that's okay. I'm okay with that.
I think like I've always wished like if I became famous that I was like the level of fame of like, you know, like a middle of the road baseball player, like a guy that can just walk around completely unnoticed, but is like really good at what he does, but not super famous.
You know, my Facebook profile, since I was like out of college, and again, this has now become a little bit more of like a popular opinion, but my Facebook profile for probably 15 years says, I want to have the career of Charles Howell III, because it's like, he can do anything he wants, anywhere he wants at any time. And he could also go eat down the street at like Flower Child in Phoenix and nobody's going to bother the guy.
Yeah. That's the life. It's not when you're out at dinner and everybody's walking up to you asking for your autograph. That's not the best life. Best life is being able to live in anonymity, you know.
But then like have a little success. It's like Charles Howell III's career has been massively successful by my standard. You know, I know people wish he won more, but that's an unbelievable career and life. And you know, he can go to Starbucks and they're probably gonna write, you know, something different on his cup, and that's good. That's the life. You want the Starbucks barista to screw up your name like 80% of the time, you know, because they're not going to screw up. Hey, Jordan Spieth hadn't got anything but Jordan on a Starbucks cup in a long time, if ever, you know. Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to mess up Tiger very much. But, you know, if you're, you know, Bubba Dickerson probably gets that messed up every now and again. Shout out to the U.S. Amateur champion.
Oh, and Western Am, same year.
Did he really win them both in the same year?
I'm almost positive. I thought I was all in, you know, on Bubba Dickerson Island. You know, that was a very bad property purchase.
Yeah, it didn't go well. So, you know, in the sports world, besides baseball, to know that in the last 20 years we've had two successful Bubbas, and I'll say Bubba Dickerson is successful because he won the amateur. That's probably not going to happen a ton in most professional outlets.
I feel like football, you could have some Bubbas.
Two offensive linemen Bubbas?
I don't know. Yeah, I could see offensive linemen, exactly. Like, but I don't think many other sports, like basketball, there's not going to be many Bubbas playing.
Let's see here. Now I'm looking up Bubba Dickerson. He won the 01 US AM. He won the 0-1 Western Am. Way to go. I'm very impressed. See, this is why you're you. You remember that.
I know. I remember all this useless crap, but then I can't remember to, like, you know, clean my clothes up. My wife drives my wife crazy. So when you're in the industry, you're blogging. When do you think that broadcasting was a possible avenue?
Well, I always wanted to broadcast. The issue being that I'd never really done it. You know, a lot of people go to school and, you know, spend 4 years doing that. When I got to school, I wrote, and that was my main focus. And I wrote for the student newspaper.
So were you a journalism major?
You know, what's up? Journalism major. And you know, it was funny. I had all these plans to do all this broadcasting internship stuff. And I just fell in love with the writing side of it. I love the grind. I love the hustle. You're interviewing the head coach for the football team, and the journalist, the print journalist, you know, are sitting around for 45 minutes because they've got to get all this stuff, and the TV people need one soundbite. And I love the hustle of the writing side. So I didn't do any really broadcasting in college outside of an internship at NBC. But I always had this dream of it. And I remember I did a couple things. I did this thing at the rodeo in Vegas. Please God, I hope it's not on the internet.
I hope it is.
I did this thing for the rodeo for AOL, I think. And I mean, if you watch that, I had to have been the most uncomfortable human on the planet in front of the camera. It's just awful. I did a thing on this new 17th tee at St. Andrews. I had like my dad hold the video camera years ago, and it was awful. And so I obviously needed to kind of improve. And I had a couple opportunities come to me the same year from Golf Channel and from this startup and Back My Network. And they kind of came to me, and I had a couple auditions, and I got this job. And it was so weird. I mean, you know, to take a chance, you know, if you think back on it, taking a chance on somebody like me was silly. I mean, there's no reason to. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. I'd never really read a teleprompter before.
No bad habits though.
You know, I had this weird lip thing for a while, where I would lick my lips a lot, and it drove me crazy. It drove my wife really crazy. So, there's stuff like that you've got to break, but yeah, it was nice. I mean, I had the opportunity. I mean, you know, you think back on opportunities in your life that work out in your favor, and getting this chance at this place that only lasted whatever 4 months. I mean, I got to talk about golf for an hour a day every day, and I was kind of like the voice of the show. Plus, I got a chance to go on their other shows with guys like John McGinnis and Jeff Rude, and real golf people. You know, guys that like have been in the industry playing or riding for decades, and they'd ask me to come on the show once a week or twice a week. And I know everybody talks about reps. I know that you talk about reps with your podcast. You and I've had this conversation before. It's like going back and listening to one of your first podcasts. You know, the reps are real. I mean, you know, hitting range balls is real. And it was kind of where it went. And then opportunity presents itself with Fox the moment kind of Back Nine cease to exist, and Fox picks this thing up, and luckily I'm in the Northeast, and luckily Mark Loomis lives an hour and a half away, and we just so happen to go play golf one day, and you know, that kind of stuff falls in your lap. So, you know, it's, you know, now when you kind of, even the way I say it, you know, when you think about circumstances in kind of the walk through the life thing, it is nuts how certain things like kind of almost, you know, work together in tandem, you know.
Yeah, I mean, half of it's like, it's just that timing of luck and opportunities, you know, and being in the right place at the right time is just so huge.
And your example of this too, I mean, you know, I know you're one of my favorite people in golf. I mean, I know you know that, but, you know, if you come around 5 years later, you know, there might be somebody that, you know, architecture talk is already, you know, blown up, I'd say, and I'm sure you're part of it to a certain extent, but you know, if you come around 5 years later, or so you're 5 years younger or something like that, you know, there might've been some guy that starts this whole talk about it. And you've got to kind of like find the crease in that conversation. And yet, you know, you come around a time where people want to talk about golf courses. People realize that golf courses don't have to be this name to be cool. And you have this kind of audience that loves listening to that point, you know, like me. And it's opened my eyes to it too. You know, that's something that's so funny to me is like a Yeaman's Hall that, I had a very lucky opportunity to go play, you know, a place like that. I might not even know what it was, you know, 6 or 7 years ago before I kind of cared about looking a little bit deeper into the story. So yeah, that's how it works. And, you know, that's what worked for me. And, you know, it's been awesome to do the USGA stuff because you don't just have to talk about one tour. And that, mm-hmm. I think is something that we all really like is that every single week that we have, we've got a completely different group of people to talk about. And maybe a billion people aren't watching like they're going to watch the US Open, but that's okay. You know, I mean, our job is just to talk about it. You know, our job isn't to go find people to come watch the US Junior Amateur, but we like talking about the US Junior Amateur because it's these young kids that one day we're probably going to see at a different level. So that's what's been cool about what we do.
Do you feel like, I never had thought about this, but do you guys tailor the broadcast differently for the US Open, knowing that you have, you know, millions of casual fans versus say like the US Senior Women's Open, where, you know, like only diehard fans are watching?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, I don't want to speak for our producer and Joe and Zinger and those guys, you know, but I would say that there was a lot of people on Friday afternoon of the US Open that were complaining on social media about our coverage because we were showing too much Tiger. And it's one of those things like we're going to show Tiger's round on a Friday, you know, with Tiger playing in a US Open for the first time and actually having a chance to be competitive. Granted, he wasn't competitive at that US Open because he made a triple on the first hole. But, you know, for him to be healthy and have a chance to win events headed in and to be this big story coming in, and the group he was playing with, you know, that was going to be the story we were going to tell on a Friday. You know, we're not going to spend that much time on a Sunday if he'd have made the cut, because the focus in the story there is about the person that's winning. But, you know, on Friday, I mean, we've got casual sports fans that are tuning in to see Tiger Woods play. And, you know, with not many storylines happening at that time, you know, that's the way we're going to go down. And if that, you know, if a diehard golf person wants to see, you know, Eduardo, you know, Molinari play a hole, it's like, you know, I mean, I hate to do this to you on a Friday, but you're just going to have to wait around for the weekend, because that's when you're going to have a chance to see that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I see it because I've got all my college buddies are like non-golfers. They're golfers, but they're very, 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 very casual golfers. And like our group text, like I only get texts about golf when Tiger's in the hunt.
Exactly.
You know? Like, and they're like, what do you think? Do you think he's going to win? And it's like, you know, like that makes me realize like how like it gets you out of the bubble that you live in as a diehard golf fan or covering golf. And it's so important to have the perspective of like, hey, like this is really important for the majority of our audience, because like, you know, that's the majority of those that US Open Friday is. I mean, it's a chance to expose so many people to the game.
Right. And it's prime time, and it's, you know, outside New York, and it's on this. It's kind of the only, I mean, with the World Cup not yet starting, and with the NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs being done, you know, we were the game that week. You know, we were the sports game. And you're like, you know, people are going to turn on something that night. And if you're a sports fan and you see golf live, you know, on Fox, it's like, I'm going to turn this on, and Tiger Woods is there. You're not going to turn it off. You know, so, I mean, there's definitely a business component to that stuff. And there's definitely a level of showcasing those types of players at those times. And as you said, I mean, when we get to the women's senior or the, you know, girls junior or the boys junior, you know, we're going to show the golf that's happening and the competitive matches. It's funny, you know, was it the US Amateur? Yeah, it was the US Amateur last week. And, you know, we only have so many cameras, and we only have so much staff out there for these events, because people might not know this, but to put on a golf telecast, it actually costs money. And so
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? there was one match at the end that we weren't showing at all early. And there were people on Twitter that were kind of, and there was like two people on Twitter that were complaining to us about it. But, you know, I mean, I get it if it's your friend or your buddy out there playing, and we want to showcase everybody. And we're going to eventually get to that, because we have a window where we're going to have to show these matches. And it's going to be, if it's the last match out, it's going to be the one that fills. But it's just so funny, some of the times you get the people that complain about certain stuff, and you're like, we're showing commercial-free coverage of the US Amateur from Pebble with some of these camera angles that nobody's ever seen, yet they're still going, why are you not showing this match? You're like, sorry, man. I mean, Cole Hammer's playing. You know, Cole Hammer's like this next, what we expect to be kind of the next, you know, big thing in young American golf. It's like, if he's playing a match and he's playing well, we're probably going to show a lot of his match.
That kid, something else, huh?
I mean, just that match, that semifinal match, and I had the US Amateur champion on my podcast, but, you know, chatting with him a little bit about that match between those two, Victor and Cole, that was as good a golf as I've seen this year. I mean, they were playing unbelievable, and they were making putts on top of each other, and, you know, Cole Hammer hung in there, and Victor Hovland birdies his last five holes. You know, I mean, it's just a reminder to people, as I always say, these amateurs are amateur by word only, you know, with how much they practice and all the technology they have around themselves. They've got the ability to go out there and fire numbers. I mean, you look at Braden Thornberry, who, you know, nearly wins, you know, a PGA Tour event. I mean, there's these guys out there that are really, really close to being on that level, if not already to that level. And they're going to get to that level quickly the moment they turn professional. And it's just a big, big difference than what golf looked like 10 years ago.
I mean, look at Neiman. He's right. 19. He should be a freshman in college.
And he's unbelievable professionally. Yeah. It's just stupid. It's there's a level of confidence. And I wonder, I'd love to know if college coaches teach confidence in a different way, or if they push confidence in a different way these days than maybe what they used to. You know, I mean, you hear Paul Ezinger talk a lot about the way he played when he was, you know, in college, and how he always says he couldn't break 77. But, you know, this is a guy that was one of the best players in the world for a long time. And, you know, that's not the case now. I mean, if you're in college and you're shooting 75, you know, you're probably not going to make the team ever, you know, and that's just how that goes until you figure it out. So I just wonder if there's a different conversation and a different dialogue with the coaches now to say, you know, you've got to be great now. Like, you can't be good. You've got to be great now, because that's what it's going to take.
It's crazy, because you see it. I see it on like a state level, like these kids and what's happened with like amateur golf. At like, if you don't shoot, like, I remember when I was in college, like if I shot 77, I was in the state am, you know?
Right.
And nowadays it's like, if you got to shoot even par or better to get into the state am, you know, and there's so many kids that are so good. And, I mean, I played golf with a kid that's going to Illinois next year. You know, at his USAM qualifier, he shot 10 under over two rounds. And I'm just like, I don't have 10. I never had 10 under in the bag. And this kid has it at 18.
No, it's silly. And it's only getting younger. I always say, when I play in those USAM qualifiers, US Open qualifiers, whatever. And, you know, I live in Arizona. So a lot of ASU kids, or if I'm down in Tucson, a lot of U of A kids. And they all hang around after, not because they want to see what their friends shot, or their teammates, what they shot, but it's because they know their teammates shot something good enough to at least be in the conversation, and they're just waiting to see what that number is. That's what's crazy. It's not, hey, what'd you shoot? Hey, how'd you play? It's you know, how low was it? Was it four? Was it five? It's an expectation to go out there and do it. And I think that's why you're seeing so many amateurs in these events. You know, I mean, there's 19 amateurs or 29 amateurs at the US Open. It was crazy how many of those guys there were. And they get there expecting to do well. You know, it's not just to show up and get your pendant and walk around between the ropes and smile at fans. I mean, they're there expecting to make the weekend and to play well enough to get in the conversation. And I said it this year and it was wrong, but I'll tell you this, we are going to get to a place at some point where I truly believe an amateur is going to be at least not maybe in the hunt come the weekend, but I could see, you know, a top 10 or a couple of amateurs in the top 10 in the coming years, because the confidence level just continues to soar.
I've kind of been waiting for an amateur win at like the professional level. You know, a couple of years ago, we had Paul Dunn in the final group of the Open. Then we had Morikawa was in a playoff on the Webb Tour, and Thornberry, Sam Burns had a top 10, both those guys. You know, like it's just a matter of time before one of these kids wins one of these things.
Didn't Summer Hayes win something as an amateur?
I think he did. He won a Web. Yeah. He did. I mean, that's a good point.
I'm with you, but it's, you know what's funny is I'm reading the match right now, and I'd never read it before.
Yeah, somebody wanted to know what took you so long. That's a question from Mike McGee.
I got some people that were not happy about that, and I'm like, listen, sorry. I've just never got around to reading it. And I'm reading it right now, and it's funny, you know, the dialogue about the amateur golfer in that book, of course, you know, this is happening in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. But the dialogue around the idea of the amateur was this gentleman game, and it's turning. It's not because the golf's going back to this gentleman level of I'm going to be an amateur golfer because it's, you know, you can make more money there. For goodness sakes, we know that's not true. But I'm very interested in the amateur competing in these events again, because I truly think there's a chance that this could be a thing. I mean, what do you think? You know, the USGA would do, and the Buddy Marucci's of the world would do if we had an amateur in the final group of the US Open. I mean, it would be unbelievable. I mean, it would make, you know, kind of their decision for all these years. It would make it almost kind of like worth the wait to see if this could happen, because I truly think it could. I think we could see an amateur, maybe not win, but I could definitely see an amateur compete.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look at, I mean, like Cole Hammer is a perfect example. You know, he's Texas, you know, he's kind of like the next phenom for Texas after they had, you know, Spieth was the young phenom, and then they had Hostler, who was, you know, Hostler's like a good example of that, because he was in contention at that U.S. Open at Olympic Club.
Right.
It's a matter of time. I mean, it's the whole amateur game has changed. It's a fascinating thing with like mid-ams and ams, and like I think the gap between, you know, the mid-am and the regular am, which is now college kids and high schoolers, is getting wider than ever.
I absolutely agree. I mean, it's like I love trying to do the US amateur qualifying, but it's like I mean, what are you doing out there with those guys? Come on, like it's a waste of my time. It's like I get out there and I shoot, like you said, I shoot a great round of 76. I'm like, all right, well, see you guys, nice 64.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like 72-70. I remember that even like 4 years ago. I had a good USAM where I missed by like a shot. And I shot 73-71, you know?
Okay.
And it's like nowadays, that's like just like pack up your bags. You got no chance. You know? You're like trunk slamming. I mean, the kids are trunk slamming at that. And that was like 5 years ago.
You know? Uber slamming. They're Uber slamming to get out of there.
Yeah. So in terms of amateur golf, you know, it seems like you had a great time at the AM. Do you think more amateur golf coverage is coming?
I would like to see it. You know, the Golf Channel, I mean, you know, for us, I mean, obviously we do quite a bit of amateur golf. I am actually surprised the Golf Channel doesn't do more of it. I mean, I'm surprised the Western AM's not televised. I'm surprised. I don't understand why there's not. And I mean, do they call them amateur majors? I mean, can we talk about what a major would be in amateur golf? But there's, you know, there's four or five events that you could do the coverage from start to finish. And kudos to Golf Channel on the collegiate coverage. They do a great job with that. And I just feel like, why wouldn't you do this? Because, you know, the US Amateur is my favorite event we cover all year. I mean, and it's not even close. I mean, both the women's and the US Amateur, the storylines, the play, the names that come out of it, the names you remember, the guys you see when they're 14 and 15 that get through, that eventually are 18 and are competing. You know, you think about our first US Open, Cole Hammer's a 15-year-old US Open, gets into that, and now he's the favorite coming into the US Amateur, and he's a co-medalist. You know, I love watching and walking those storylines through year after year. And I don't see how passionate golf people wouldn't be into that. I mean, again, you know, there's budgets for television stuff. And live events, live golf is the biggest budget of any sport because there's so many cameras you need on different places. But I'd watch the Western AM. I mean, you'd watch the Western AM. I'd be glued to it. You know, I mean, this would be must-watch TV for me. And with the way the PGA Tour is going to the passionate golf fan and the level of kind of intrigue that comes with the PGA Tour or lack thereof, I mean, I think we're going to be looking for more golf to watch on TV. And to me, amateur golf makes the most sense.
I feel like they could do low-budget telecast too. Like we saw it when the guys were on strike this year at was it Sony? Like they really only need a couple cameras to do it effectively, you know?
I guess you're right. Like to see it, sure. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody in TV that would be willing to kind of take the we're going to do a low budget approach to it. But you do the back nine of the Western. I mean, you know, you don't have to have as many cameras. It's almost like the Masters in the old days. I think if that happened, inevitably more invites would come for that stuff. You know, that's something I always wish would happen. I wish there was more invites to things for these guys that win these huge events, because these huge events are very, very hard to win. You know, the Western AM is, in my opinion, the hardest event in the world to win, professional or amateur or otherwise. And you should get invited to this big stuff if you win that thing. It's crazy. You
know? Yeah, I don't understand.
You should get into the US Open and the Masters and the PGA Championship. Like, that should be an honor to come with it. And I feel like if TV followed that, maybe there'd be a better chance of that happening.
Yeah, it would be cool. I think we're going to see more of it in the future. It would be, you know, there's like, I don't know, the Pacific Coast AM's always a big one. You know, the Sunny Ana, you know, there's North South. Like there are a lot of really cool events. These kids are so good. That's the thing. You know, I watched the Western AM. I didn't go this year. I had a bunch of stuff, but the year before, you know, and these guys go around and shoot like 63 at Skokie in Chicago, right, which is like, I'm like, 63 is like not what I expected.
Oh, you know, yeah, it's a joke. But no, I love being a part of something like the US Open because it's the US Open. But, you know, for me to get a chance to do these, you know, quote unquote, lower level events at the US Junior or the Curtis Cup, things like that. You know, the passion in those events, the passion of the golf and the passion of the win, and it's simply being a match win, you know, winning a match and moving on. You know, the passion there is what, to me, you and I's golf's like. Now, the golf's better, but if I'm playing you for a $10 Nassau, we're not really playing for the money. You know, we're really playing for
to
the win.
Yeah. It's like,
and,
pickup basketball. It's like why you get pissed when you lose pickup basketball. It's the competitiveness. In terms of what do you think the you do the PGA Tour live stuff, so you're around the tour pros. What do you think the biggest difference between the top AMs and your regular Joe Schmo tour player, say your Billy Horschel?
It's probably putting, and it's probably course management, I would say. I mean, there's not a ton of course management even on the PGA Tour anymore, but there's still a little bit of it. You know, I mean, I know Brooks Koepka doesn't really do that, but, you know, there is a level of understanding when to attack and when not to. And I think you still see amateurs at times in big pressure moments maybe make a decision they shouldn't have made because they think they've got to win that hole and that's the last time. You know what's funny is I saw a lot of that with putting this week, or excuse me, this past week with Pebble Beach. Was I saw a lot in on the greens when a guy's two down or three down with five to go and it's a birdie putt and they gas it 12 feet by because they think they have to make the birdie putt, not thinking to themselves, if I three putt this, it's over. You know, even if I don't make this birdie putt and I've got a couple holes to go, I could pull something off.
That's a fascinating thing that I think I always think about, like how I've learned about stuff, like as I get older, like I'm so much smarter now. I'm not nearly as good as I used to be, but I'm way better, if that makes sense.
Right.
And like one of the things people will be like, well, like, hey, you know, if I'm playing a two man game, they'll be like this putt, if it doesn't go in, it doesn't matter. And I'm like, and I say back, I'm like, it's going in the same speed as if it was going to go in if the next putt really mattered. Like, I don't believe in this whole making putts. Like, you hit it harder to make it. Like, just hit the putt the same speed you'd usually hit it, you know?
Absolutely. You know, that's something that I do, and I've done poorly in especially best ball qualifiers. My buddy Ashton Woods and I have yet to qualify for the four ball. I think we missed out by a shot a couple of years ago. But I feel like I have at times felt like these putts are do or die when I'm the guy hitting a birdie putt. And if I was playing just by myself, I wouldn't do that. So I've almost started to try to approach those types of things, a two-man thing in particular, just trying to play golf on my own, thinking that it's exactly what it'd be like if it was a stroke play event. Because there's so much pressure. Oh my God, I'm the last one with the birdie putt. Well, I've got to make it. You know, and you're like, well, yeah, but I mean, you want to make every putt you hit, don't you? So why wouldn't you just roll the same way?
You're trying to make every putt.
You know? Right, exactly. I mean, you're trying to make every putt or that's makeable, right? I mean, there's definitely putts you know you're not, that aren't a realistic opportunity, but yeah, you're trying to make every putt. So hit it to make it, but also hit it knowing that, you know, it's got to go in, as you said, with a certain speed. You're not just taking the breakout and gas in a 10-foot.
You know, I heard somebody told me that their trick for the best ball tournaments is they play a match against each other.
What's that, Andy? Sorry, say that again.
I heard this trick. This guy told me he's had a ton of success in two-man tournaments, and him and his partner play matches against each other.
Interesting. So internally between the two, they play against.
They have
like
they have
that probably would work for me.
They have like a betting game between the two of them while they're playing together in a tournament. So each other are just trying to beat the shit out of each other the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably so smart. I mean, and then you get done and you go, we either qualified or we didn't, but we had fun doing it. The idea of that is it gets the pressure can. The pressure can make you play golf a way you'd never play golf. And that's the big difference in people that can do it and people that can't, you know?
Yeah. It's all comfort. That's the thing. It's like the pressure makes you uncomfortable, and uncomfortable is when people just do bad. That's the trick to tournament golf, is getting comfortable.
I mean, I there's been plenty of times where I'm not comfortable and the scores absolutely reflect it.
Yeah. It's awful. It's nothing worse than when you're on the first tee and you know you're not ready to play in the tournament. What was your favorite course to cover this year on the USGA circuit? And what was your favorite course that you played, either USGA or non-USGA course?
I'm not saying this just because I'm talking to you. I mean, I think covering Chicago golf, getting a chance to see it for a first time, getting a chance to show it with the cameras we had, and allow people kind of a glimpse into that place. I think, you know, there's probably two or three places in the country that maybe are as exclusive in the sense of eyeballs on it than Chicago golf. So I think mixing that with the fact that it was a first USGA championship and you were a part of that, that was pretty special. I felt like our team kind of approached it that way. You know, they went into it knowing, you know, this is going to be, you know, there's not many first USGA championships. And to get to do it on Chicago golf. And then my favorite course I played on the road. You know, I didn't play a ton of golf this year. Last year we played golf all the time. It was crazy. I mean, we played Prairie Dunes twice 1 week. Last year we played Myopia and Essex and all these crazy places. This year didn't play a ton of golf. I did get a chance to play Fishers during media day. And I think, you know, just in a sense of a day and an experience, that was probably the best. Just because, there's going to play an elite level golf course that's in elite level condition. Fishers is not going to be in elite level condition just because that's just not what it is. You know, it's in good condition and it's a piece of property that I always wanted to see. And, we did the whole thing. We did the ferry and the boat and the driving. And so it's an entire day to go see this kind of gem of a golf course. So that was probably my favorite. I had a hell of a good time doing that. And then, I got to play National in Cyprus. You know, I mean, these are two of the best golf courses in the country. And, you kind of take your pick on those. I almost feel like they're kind of similar. You know, they're small, smaller ballparks next to these championship golf courses that host championship events, yet they're the ones that everybody tries to get on. You know, everybody wants to get on National and everybody wants to get on Cyprus over playing a Pebble. And so, I had a friend ask me, is Cyprus your favorite course you ever played? And, I don't know what that means. I don't know what my favorite course is. I know what my favorite experiences were. And I almost vote it and rate it more on that. You know, the experiences of the people you're with and how much they're into it and how fun you're having and how much you're taking in the course. You know, how often are you pulling out a camera? I think is something that I've really started to be cognizant of. And I know with you and I's jobs and with plenty of people around, that's part of it. So one of my kind of rules is like, I try not to pull my phone or camera out at least on the entire front nine, because I know it's, you know, we live in a world where we have to kind of post this stuff, but I don't want to be on that. You know, I want to be breathing in and looking around and enjoying the experience. So
my new thing is like, I love the places that are like the strictest about no cell phones. I actually I love when I leave my phone in my car, like, and it's just gone and I just get to play golf. You know, it's funny how it's changed, how golf isn't like just pure golf like it used to be.
You know, the thing again is, you know, for me, I've kind of got to post the golf that I play because it's part of what we do. Yeah. And I'm with you. I've kind of gone 180 on it. I mean, I hate interrupting a moment of a round at a place like Cyprus to take a picture, even though I want to take pictures because every hole's awesome, you know? So, you know, I want to have my phone out the entire time, but I won't, and I don't need to, because, you know, when fricking Ben Hogan was walking around Cypress Point, he wasn't taking pictures, you know, and he could remember every hole and every step and every bump on every green because he was taking it in with different sensory details. And so, like, you know, for me, it's reminding myself that a picture doesn't define the fact that I was there, you know? I don't need a picture to say I played Cypress Point. I played Cypress Point because I played Cypress Point, and there'll be moments from that round that I'll remember the rest of my life. And so I'm trying, I'm with you. I'm really, really trying to be on my phone, if at all, maybe one or two holes to take a picture or two and then put it back away.
Yeah. So with Pebble and next year having the U.S. Open, do you expect to see much changes to the course from USAM to U.S. Open? And how helpful was it to get to call it there and then have it there next year?
The rough will be higher. The rough will be thicker. It'll play a little bit different, just in the sense of scheduling. It was dry this week. I mean, they hadn't had rain since April. So it was dried and pretty firm, and the greens were firm. I'm hoping you see a little bit about that. I think we'll have more. I think the winds will be more swirly when we're there. We didn't get a ton of wind during the few days there at Pebble. But I would say the rough's up. Having an opportunity to be there and cover it and get a feel for the way people play certain holes and certain shots and tees they might play certain days, I mean, it's impossible to explain how beneficial that is for us. I mean, it's crazy good. I mean, we know where the booth is. Like, we know where the booth's going to be. You know, we know where these amateur kids, where these kids are hitting their driver on 18. I mean, you'll never in 50 years of watching the AT&T, you'll never see drives where these kids were on 18 just because it's a different time of year. I mean, they were 30 past the tree, 40 past the tree, hitting six irons into 18 green. I mean, so it'll be interesting to see if it plays a little like that in June, like it did, you know, in August. So, but you know, I think we'll see it. I think we'll see it play somewhat similar in the sense of scoring, because with the winds down, Pebble's gettable, and with the winds up, it plays really difficult.
Yeah, yeah, those greens are so small too. It's crazy how tough that place is. That's a great example of a course defending par despite, like, without yardage.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a long golf course by any stretch of the imagination, but if you put yourself in one weird spot, you know, if you put yourself left on 9 or 10, you're scrambling to save par despite having a 9 iron in your hand.
Yeah, this is the thing too, is like the uneven lies out there, like the, you know, you rarely have like a flat lie. It's something I've noticed. I play less and less golf now, and I actually play like par threes exceptionally well. And I thought about it the other day. I was like, well, it's because it's like a dead flat lie every time, you know? And it's like, it gets so much harder when the ball's like above or below your feet. And, you know, you have like it's so weird how that little difference makes it. But that at the pro level is like everything. If everything's flat, it's just target practice for these guys.
Yeah. It's like when it's soft. You know what? I want to say this about Pebble. I used to talk a little bit of trash about one, like everybody did, and, you know, two, when it's a par five, is kind of a gettable, kind of a whatever par five. Pebble's awesome. It is awesome. There are like, it is such a awesome walk around, and the views and the par threes, you know, the kind of the different par threes you play and the shots you play. You know, I hadn't been there in a while. I mean, I haven't been to Pebble probably in 6 or 7 years, and I just walking around that place and driving around, you just forget how strategic 15 and 16 are. You know, these are holes that you're not going to see the ocean, but they're you've got to put the ball in the right spot to take advantage, and the greens defend, like you said. And I was massively impressed by it. I don't spend a lot of time watching the pro-am on TV just because it's a lot of non-golf they show. But getting a chance to kind of take that golf course in for a few days of championship golf, man, I'm pumped for the U.S. Open. I think it's going to be so awesome.
Yeah, the Pebble is like overrated take is so overblown. Like,
exactly.
It's in this tier of golf courses. Like, I don't think about like numbers, but rather like classes. And it's like Pebble is the golf course that you get on a plane and go play, you know? Like, if somebody says, hey, we got a spot at Pebble and you don't have to pay, like, I'm getting on a plane tomorrow to go play.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's, you know, there's 6 or 7 holes at Pebble that are basically untouched. You know, there's nothing that can really touch them. And that's what makes it fun. Also, the new tee on 10 is awesome. Yes. I hope they play the new tee on 10 at the US Open. I bet they don't, but I wish they would.
They have that one on 9, too, that's way down to the right, I think. I don't know if they used it last week, but yeah, that stretch of holes is unbelievable. So it's like, it's probably the best stretch of golf in, you know, one of the best stretch of golf in North America. So, I had, KVV on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and we talked about, golf czar and, what changes we would make to the game. If you were the golf czar, what's the one change you'd make?
I would not be as afraid of match play, on the professional level as it seems like we are. I would say that would probably be my first thing. I would move the PGA Championship to match play immediately. I would probably make the Tour Championship match play.
Yeah. That should totally be match play.
I mean, I was thinking about the playoffs because I knew we were going to talk a little playoffs. And match play's fear, it's TV based, of course, but you know, the match play fear is you get two guys that nobody cares about in the finals, and then you're going to get bad ratings. The funny thing is, like, the tour championships, 30 guys, and they're always pretty much 95% of guys you've heard of. I just don't understand what the fear is of that. You know, it seems like the easiest event to make match play is the tour championship.
They're worried about like Satoshi Kodaira against Siwoo Kim in the finals.
But again, I mean, but that's, you know, I mean, Siwoo Kim won the Players.
Like, I know. I mean, you know, and he's 22.
Yeah, it's like the fear, again, the golf, to me, the names are massively important. We talked about Tiger on Friday at the U.S. Open, and showing him was big for golf and for the sport. But, you know, when you're playing, when you're watching anybody play for a ton of, a life-changing amount of money, even for these professionals, and you're watching it in a match play format, God, it would be so awesome. I mean, you look back, like, you know, the FedEx Cup playoffs, when they first started, a little bit like the Pebble Take, it was easy to bag on them. I flipped a little bit on them. You know, it's 4 weeks. I wish they didn't have the break. I wish it was just four straight, because I think it should be a little bit of an endurance test as well. But, you know, 4 weeks and all the big guys play for four straight weeks. And I'm not sure that happens at any other time on tour all year. And also, if you look back over the last few years, we've had some really fun finishes. I mean, Ryan Moore versus Rory was great.
That was unbelievable.
Xander was great. You know, I mean, Justin was close, and Jordan had a chance to maybe make it a Justin Jordan playoff for the FedEx Cup, which would have been must watch. You know, it's good. It's for what it's supposed to do. It's intriguing. I just think that if you made the Tour Championship match play, you get to that final with a lot more online than anything else these guys see in that world.
Yeah, you could go to 32 guys instead of 16.
Exactly.
Or instead of 30. So you go 30. To 32, and then you take those 32, and it's 32, 16, 8, 4, 2. So it'd be five rounds instead. So it starts on Wednesday instead of Thursday.
Yeah, and then you make the gaps of pay pretty wide for make it at the next day. So like, if you get to the final four, the gap is a big jump. It's not like everybody's cashing a ton of money. You should make the gaps worthwhile. I mean, not like these guys need the money anyway, but at least it's something they think about in their heads. But I don't know, that's something I would do. The professional world being afraid of match play is something that bothers me a little bit, because it's something that match play is, in my opinion, the best way to golf. And and we as a people, for whatever reason, we're like afraid of it. You know, it's like we have to turn in scores. We have to have a handicap. I would say golf carts in general, I would probably limit. I just think, you know, if you want to have golf carts at every course, you probably shouldn't have a golf cart at any historic golf course. And unless, you know, obviously someone needs it for health reasons. And I would just say, you know, walking a golf course is a completely different experience. And as long as it's not a million degrees, it makes the game and sport more enjoyable, I really believe. I'm trying to think of what else. I would let the PGA Tour players wear shorts too. I don't understand why they have to wear pants.
You might get a personal call from Jeff Shackelford.
I mean, that was one of my favorite things. I said something about I joked on that tweet about how the NBA players wear shorts in the finals and how that's disgraceful. Obviously, just kind of poking fun at Jeff, who I like a lot.
Yeah.
And I had four or five responses of people that were like, "That's not the same." And I was like, "Yeah, you didn't get my joke." It's funny how Twitter sometimes you can't totally pick up on it. I'm trying to think of some other stuff that I would do. I'm just in this camp that golf's fine, you know, like I think people that love golf, you know, and people are eventually going to get to it. I've said this a lot, but we spent like the better part of the 2000s trying to get people that were like 16 years old interested in golf. And I'm like, they're going to eventually be 30 and they'll be looking for something to do.
That's all my friends now play golf all the time on weekends. And they always want, I'm like, I can't play. But like they all like love golf, and in college they all made fun of me for playing golf.
Right. I just say wait. I mean, if we just wait a little bit, people eventually come to the sport. It's funny that, you know, we sold this bill of goods, like golf's in trouble. And it's like, well, we built a whole bunch of golf courses and a lot of them aren't very good and they're expensive and it takes forever to play. Those are the things that to me, it's like, you know, you and I were having drinks and we were talking about Winter Park when we were in Chicago. And it's like, Winter Park's successful because of the business model. It's not because of anything other than the fact that it allows people to come out there any way they want for a relatively solid amount of money and enjoy themselves in their capacity. And it's not like, get here and it's $300 and you're on the tee now and you've got to play this fast and you've got to get done and we're going to yell at you and then leave the property because that's the end of your day. You know, it's just, to me, it's the business approach to it. And if you approach it with a little bit more of a relaxed kind of ideal, then I think it would work. If you want me to be the czar, I'd say build 50 winter parks in every state. You know, like allow people that opportunity to take in golf.
Yeah, it's just different experience. I think just in general. Yeah, I think golf needs to just appeal to like the diehard golfer, because like the more somebody's friend loves golf, the more likely they're going to make their friends come golf with them. You know, they're going to keep talking about it until they try it, you know?
And then they're going to want to check courses off their list and destinations and places to go and see this and experience that. And, you know, that's what my friends' love of the game is not watching Jordan Spieth, no offense to Jordan Spieth, and it's not watching Phil Mickelson, and it's not watching Dustin Johnson. You know, my friends who are my best friends, their love of golf is, you know, I sent an email yesterday about our golf trip to Tubac, Arizona in early January. You know, that's why they love golf, you know, for the 3 days they get to spend at a 27-hole facility that most people don't know much about, just enjoying golf and the people around it. That's kind of what I talk about with the courses. You know, it's the experience of it as much as anything. And if you're having a fun experience and golf is involved, it's going to leave you with a good taste in your mouth, you know, and that's a pretty simple, you know, simple philosophy. I think that's why Bannon has always been so popular. You know, I think Bannon is so popular because, yeah, it's a name and it's a resort name that people know and they can buy a shirt from and wear a logo. But I think the fact that when you're there, you A, don't feel like you're intruding, and B, you have plenty of places to just enjoy yourself. If it's not the preserve at Shorty's or the driving range or the 19th hole or the kind of the different layouts of the pubs, or it's going back to the cottage and just sitting down in a fairly relaxing chair that doesn't seem like it cost $1 billion, and you just kind of take in the weather. And, you know, that is, to me, it's a simple approach, sure, but, you know, you leave that place feeling good. Even if you play bad, you leave the place feeling good.
Yeah, it's catered towards the masses, as opposed to, you know, the 1% professional, like the, you know, I'm not going to bag too much on TPC Network, but, you know, the idea of playing a golf course that's built for pros, like as a 15 handicap, is like, that's just a preposterously dumb idea. You know, just go get your teeth kicked in for 2 hours or 4 hours, 5 hours.
It's so funny. You and I talk about it a lot. It's so funny that, like, I mean, for decades, Andy, for decades, the only places you really went were these places that would beat the shit out of you. You're like, hey, let's go on this golf trip to X place. And you go and it's 7,400 and it's impossible. And 2 yards off the fairway is you lose your ball. And you're like, I spent a lot of money on this trip.
Yeah. And it's just like the first reaction is hard. Like, I can't stand that. Like, it's the worst thing in the world. But speaking of match play, Ryder Cup coming up, who's winning? If you gun to your head today,
who's your pick? Oh man. I mean, I guess I'll go USA. I know it's been a long time. I think it's going to be more competitive than maybe some of my fellow golf journalism people believe it will be. I know there's been some people that are saying it's going to be an American route. I don't think it's ever going to be an American route when it's on international soil. But the American team is from 1 through 12 is silly good. I mean, and that is what you always see when it's competitive, is who wins those matches, or the guys that play, you know, one team match and play singles. And when it comes down to that on Sunday in singles, when everybody's out on the golf course, I almost feel like there'll be four fairly assured points from the guys that are on the bottom part of the roster. Now, I mean, of course they could lose the match. Anybody could. But I feel like if you were going to look at that, that's where the handicap is on a very, very advantageous side for the Americans, is the guys that are just going to make the team, the guys that just qualified in, or the guys that have to be asked to play. The thing that Europe has that they can play the hand of, if they do it the right way, is basically just play their four best teams every time. Yeah. And I mean, that'll be exhausting, but I think that's probably their best play, is to play the guys that are from the same countries that'll be excited to play together, and almost allow those teams to go out there until they lose, you know, and say, Rory, if you want to play with Ian Poulter like you did 4 years ago, y'all go play together, and y'all are the team that are going to play four matches. And like, that's how it's going to go down. And same for Stenson and Norin. You know, if Stenson's on the team, it's like, you two guys go play. I mean, you guys want to play together? Y'all play. Y'all are going to be our B team. And
what about Justin Rose and Stenson? The Iceman and Rose. That's the team.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, Whatever the team is, you go with. Like, I think that because the Americans are better 1 through 12, if I was the Europeans, I would probably just play our four best teams.
Yeah. Like Molinari's got to play every single match.
Yeah. Every match he's playing.
He's like one of the three best players in the world right now.
Yeah. And John Rahm, who hasn't had as good a year as he's had in years past, but you know, Rahm's got to find somebody he's going to be excited to play with. And like, you're going to have to roll these big name players out a lot. And,
Rahm should play with Seve, you know, bring him because he's idolized like any Spanish player
that's ever played. It's, it's one of those things like, who is it going to be, Rahm and Sergio? I mean, I guess.
I don't know if Sergio's even making the team.
They'll probably get him on.
They
the
have
team.
To put him on, right?
I think so.
Like, that's the thing. It's like Stenson, Sergio, Poulter's going to have to be a pick now. Poulter is like a lock, right?
For sure.
And then, Sergio and Stenson are outside. You know, Cabrera-Bayo.
Okay, Shane Ryan, I think Shane Ryan wrote this. But, like, what's wrong with me wanting to root for the Europeans? Because I kind of do want to root for the Europeans.
I kind of am rooting for the Europeans also.
I feel like it's become such a popular opinion, like the American team's going to roll. And it's like all like the perfectly cookie cutter players that are like massively successful, like Jordan and Justin and Brooks and all these guys that are like, they're like perfect in golf. And I feel like it's almost flipped where it was like, that was the team for the Europeans for so long, and we'd roll out these guys, and you'd be like, maybe they have a chance, even though you knew they probably didn't really have a chance. And I'll say, you know, with us covering these team events, I think that the team events are the easiest events to predict by looking at the teams on or looking at the players on paper. You know, like we had the Walker Cup last year. And there was no doubt in my mind the Americans were going to kill them. Oh, and they did. And the Curtis Cup massacre. This year, there was no doubt in my mind the Americans were going to win when you just look at the players.
I think the European team has better personalities.
Agreed.
You know, they have Poulter. They have McIlroy. They've got, you know, like Fleetwood is like, I think, impossible to root against. He's like,
how do you root against him?
Yeah, he's going to be a superstar. I think Norin's a good dude, you know, like to root for. I don't know. I just think they have like a more like, you know, Webb and Bubba don't really do it for me. You know, I don't have an opinion really, you know?
Right. I mean, like, I love watching Ricky Fowler play golf. I do. I really enjoy watching Ricky play golf, but it's not like, you know, he's not going to be out on the course during the Ryder Cup, like running around high-fiving like Sergio in 99. Yeah. You know, like, it's like, I know what I'm getting with most of the guys on the American side.
Yeah. That's the thing is like, there's more personality on the European team. That's why they're more, why I feel like I want to root for them more.
I just like, I guess like my American allegiance, like I don't, if there's a thing, it's like, I kind of think about it in the Olympics a lot. I'm always like, I'm rooting for this American speed skater, and there's this guy from Belgium that's going to win like one of three Winter Olympic medals for his entire country. Like, why don't I want that guy to win? Like, that's, this guy's going to like change his entire life for the rest of his life if he wins. And like the American person with no personality wins, and you're like, sweet, you know, you're another American that was successful. I don't know. There's times where I'm like, I'm rooting for the underdog. I really like the underdog.
That's a good point, because like a gold medal at a small, in a small country is so much more significant than a gold medal in the U.S. because we get like 100 gold medalists per Olympics.
Every Olympics.
Yes.
And there's three Olympians every time that are like the ones that make the Wheaties box. And then other than that, you're like, oh, that American team won the luge. Awesome. Sweet. And then you change the channel and you have no idea who the names were, you know, for the most part. That's kind of my Molinari thing, when so many people were bummed out on social media because Tiger didn't win the British. And I was like, yo, this guy is the first player from Italy ever to win a major. Like, this is unbelievable for their country and for golf there for the next 200 years. And we're like, well, if Tiger didn't get 15.
not to mention the manner he did it in. Like, right, Tiger made the charge. Like, I remember I tweeted something, and like, it was like on hole 7. I was like, I think Molinari's the only guy that can ruin this for us, you know? And like, so many people were like, oh, what about Rory? What about, like, you could just see Molinari just was playing perfect golf. You know, yeah. Like he won because he just outplayed everybody else. That's the thing.
It's silly, but no, I'm really excited about the Ryder Cup. I'm really excited to see what transpires, and my hope to all hopes is that it's not a complete blowout, because we don't get these things much. We don't get these things in professional golf that like pique everybody's interest much, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the other thing, I'm excited to see French fans. Like, what's the French golf turnout going to be like? And what are they going to be polite? Are they going to be really rude? Like, are we going to get like Baba Booey in French?
Oh, I wonder what it is. Have you Google translated it yet?
No. I just thought of this.
We should figure this out. We should actually.
Is Victor Dubuisson going to just run out onto the course? You
know? I should have made it. There's got to be a phrase that French golfers yell, and we should figure out what that is.
Yeah, I mean, get some T-shirts. You know, that's I'm mean, walking around with it all in Chicago and end of September.
So, I love it. I think it's a great business idea.
So hey, the tour. We're talking about all these young guys earlier. What's going to happen as this trend? I don't think it's slowing down. I think you agree. It's not. It's just going to get younger, right?
Right.
What happens to all the 40-year-olds?
I think the Champions Tour might move to 45. And this is without any inside information. I could see it going to 45.
One of my contributors wrote this article that I'm going to post soon. And it's like the median age has dropped 4 years in the last, you know, 20 years of pro golfers.
Well, you know, I wrote, and this was when I wrote, this was probably 3 or 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And I did the math for like the last 10 majors, and the average age of major winner was 33. And that's obviously not the case now. You know, I mean, Koepka and Spieth and JT and these guys, like, you're going to see a teenager win a major, soon. You're going to see, I mean, like an 18-year-old. I mean, you know, we talked about Neiman. I mean, he could win a major and nobody would bat an eye at all. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's funny you ask this question. I was at the US Amateur, and then I'm reading the match, and I'm like super in on amateur golf right now. Like I'm like as high on the cloud of amateur golf as I've ever been in my life. And I was thinking about it, I was like, I'm gonna really start to try to work on my game, and I wanna like start playing in these amateur events. Like I want to play, but not just the US Amateur, the Mid Am. I want to play in these other amateur events too. And then I was like, I'm 34. Like these guys are like 17. Like I can't play against these guys.
You gotta get on the cocktail circuit, man. You gotta get in the Mid Am circuit.
No, I know, but I was thinking to myself, I was like, this is an unrealistic thing for me to think about. You know, like, we never at the US Amateur ever see somebody 34 in the quarterfinals.
That's the shame, is there used to be like Nathan Smith and Mike McCoy.
Yeah. I mean, Buddy Marucci played Tiger in 1995 in the finals.
And then he made it to the semifinals the next year.
Yeah, I mean, that's unbelievable. These like lifelong amateurs. Stuart Hagestad makes it to the round of 32, and it's like this story.
Yeah.
And he's 28, you know?
Yeah.
Like 28, it's like a miracle. And
I don't even think he's 20. I think he's like 27. 20. Yeah, he probably is 28. You're probably right.
I think I remember it from our bio sheets. I'm sure he'll text me if I'm wrong on this thing.
I know, but he will text both of us.
But yes, it's just, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. So I have a question, and this is the one thing I don't really get. Why are they so much better? Why are these young kids so much better at golf?
I have this theory. Like, me and you, we grew up with, what was your first set of clubs? Like, mine was like Tommy Armour 845s, and I remember playing like Slazenger golf balls.
Yeah, my first full set of adult clubs were Top Flight Magnas. The globe in the middle of the ball that would actually imprint on a ballata if you hit it solidly. So there was a globe in the middle of the ball where your grooves were supposed to be. this is a pretty interesting approach to an interesting approach to the sweet spot there, Top Flight.
And how far did you hit it when you were like 14, when you got into high school?
Nowhere.
See, this is the difference. Like,
we hit nowhere.
We had these balls that didn't go anywhere. They went like, they sliced like crap. Like, you know, you could hit a big slice.
70-yard slice.
Yeah. And they went nowhere. And it was like, you know, pro, the other thing was like instructors would just guess, you know?
Like, you're going to love these.
Yeah. Oh, and they'd be like, oh, like, you know, you need to do this with your swing. Like, there was no numbers behind. Like, I just think that we live in this era where, like, you literally can't miss.
Right.
Like, swing so hard at the ball now compared to the way I used to swing.
Right. Like, you had to manufacture golf shots. And you know what's funny is, I was watching the 99 Ryder Cup the other day, and Miguel Jimenez hits this foul ball during play that's 50 yards left of everything, and it went about knee high. And then I always think about stuff like Palmer and Norman on 18 at the Masters hitting these shots 30 yards right of the green. It's like, nobody does that. Like, Jordan Spieth hit that shot when he won the Masters on 18 on Saturday, and it was like 15 yards over the green, and that was like the worst shot he hit all week.
It's fascinating. Yeah, the foul balls don't exist anymore as much. Like, you know, like, you can neck the crap out of a driver today, and it just like goes straight, and if it's firm and fast, it'll roll like forever.
I mean, Rory won the PGA doing that with his 3-wood.
Yeah.
He necked that shot on 10, and it rolled up there to like 12 feet for eagle. I was like, that wasn't a good golf shot, but it turned out okay.
So my theory is that, like, I grew up with this, like, DJ's the only good golfer in our age bracket. Like, great golfer.
Right.
Like, he's the only one. Everyone else is younger or older, like Justin Rose age, which is like 38, 39. Like, there's this gap of people that we, like, when we were in college and the Pro V1, like, was really hitting the prime and technology was developing, the high school kids were better than us.
I mean, so you're saying that we had to live through the transition time between the wound and the new age ball, and because of that, we lost like 2 years of knowing how to play?
Like, we essentially just were worse because we had to like we had to like learn a new golf swing. Like, my golf swing today is so much different. Like, you know, like all you do is hit up on the ball with a driver. I just try to. And right. It goes, you know, takes all the spin off, and the ball goes really far and straight. And it's like the golf swing, these kids just learned, like, they don't know what a miss is.
They've like, never missed a ball, and they know exactly what everything goes. I mean, again, like, this is kids of privilege. Like, if you're a kid that, like, can go to these instructors and go to these places where they'll show you this stuff, like, you know, like, I still don't know how far I hit an 8-iron.
No.
Like, but these kids know exactly how far they hit an 8-iron.
The other thing is, when we were in high school, we played all these different sports. Like, these kids play one sport now.
Right.
It's all specialized.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's, it, I just, I find it massively fascinating to me that I understand that golf is younger. I have a hard time understanding why they're so much better. And this is some good points, because I think about that a lot. Like why were these other people able to compete, and why can't there be a 35-year-old that competes at the U.S. Amateur? And I always want, every single year I have this hope. I'm like, this year's going to be the year. You know, this year there's going to be a 34-year-old guy that comes out here and plays some great golf and wins a couple of matches, and he's in the semifinals, and we're like, here's this 35-year-old that's, you know, that has a, he has an accounting gig for KPMG, and, you know, he played golf at Tallahassee State, and that's never happens.
See, that's the case. They should just, you know, give me an auto birth into the Sweet 16, you know? force somebody into the Sweet 16.
You wouldn't make our TV window if you lose 9 and 8 to Cole Hammer.
I know, that's the reality.
They kick you out early. They're like, well, he didn't make the window.
Hey, maybe it's you don't get a warm up. You know, no warm up. You got to play like a true mid am. Put your shoes on and go to walk to the first tee. Bruce Lipsky style.
There's no locker. I like this. I think this is what the mid am should do. The mid am should approach it exactly like we really do play golf. It's like, oh, you wanna range? You wanna bucket of range balls? Here's 12 balls that have stripes on them, and they fly this distance, maybe.
That's I don't know. It's funny. I think that would work. I had like a weird golf thing the other day where
you had something weird about golf. I can't believe.
No, you had a weird theory. I had this realization. Like I've played less golf this year than any year in my like last 10.
Same exact thing.
So like now when I play, I go out and I like literally just like play for myself to scrape the ball around. So I like just hit it into the centers of greens, right? And like,
right.
I swung really well on like the fourth hole, and I realized like, oh, I got full control today. I can like really do whatever I want. Like I can hit shots. Like it's like the one time a year that I'll have this, you know. And then this course just ejected me because I was playing aggressive instead of just my straight to the middle of the green.
There's nothing better for people like you and I, who, again, you and I get to play more golf than most people, but like a 34-year-old buddy of mine, like there's nothing better than when you go out with them and they haven't played in 2 months or 3 months, and you see like on the seventh green they hit a shot, and you can almost see in their face like they kind of have figured it out again.
Yeah.
You know, and then for like 3 or 4 holes they hit it pretty good, and then of course it goes away. But I always love that like moment of realization where you're like kind of holding the club and you're like, oh, you know, I think I got it. I went on a stretch a couple of years ago where I was playing some of the best golf of my life, and my only swing thought was get it all the way to the top for like 2 months, and I hit it great, and then of course I stopped thinking like that and started hitting it like a dog.
It's funny. I sing the song Comfortably Numb when
you told me this
before.
Yeah, by the way,
it's been an unbelievable like awakening experience. It's actually helped my golf game quite a bit. But like I'm always so relaxed when I hit the golf ball. It's like this comfort thing. I don't know. Golf is just, it's all mental. The less I play, the better I get, I think.
I'm absolutely the same way. The if I play minimal amounts of golf, I play 50 times better. And that's just kind of how it is, you know. I mean, just, I don't really know what else to say about it. I think that means we're probably pretty psycho, you know.
Yeah, that means we get in our own way. Way, way, way too much on the golf course. All right, overrated, underrated. You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Desert golf. And this is from a bunch of people.
I would say it's living out in Arizona, I would say overrated for the golf. It's underrated for the pictures because it's very beautiful, but I don't personally love desert golf. I'd rather play any other type.
Yeah, I haven't. I've only been to Arizona once. I got to go this year.
Come on.
Neglecting.
The problem is if you come out, we'll play Phoenix Country Club, which is going to be not desert. we'll probably play Pinnacle Peak, which will be not deserts. We'll play like three of these courses, and like you won't have seen a Gila monster yet. You'll be like, what's happening here? And then before I take you to, you know, but like I go play Wekopa Saguaro, and I have a great time because it's more playable. It's a little bit wider fairways. They cleared 3 or 4 yards off the rough, off the desert when you miss it. And you can actually find your ball. You might not be able to play it, but at least you can find your ball and throw back and kind of as a lazy lateral. And yeah, that's a, by the way, the golf rules are a thing you asked me. One thing I would say is for everybody not playing in a tournament, there's no out of bounds. Just drop it. God. If you can't find your ball, just drop it. Let's go.
The lazy lateral is the best, like full-time leaf rule. If you're not playing in a tournament.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go. I said something on social media a year or two ago about, like, pick up, you know, drop your ball or something. I had a whole bunch of, like, super serious golf people like, that's not the rules. And I was like, well, then I don't want to play golf with you. Like, I mean, I don't want you to be out there grinding your tail off if we've got 4 hours to get around on a Thursday afternoon. Anyway, sorry, that was a tangent. We can go back.
That's okay. Yeah, the rules are overrated.
Yes, exactly.
All right, Alex War, 18-hole USGA qualifiers.
So that's what he asked. 18-hole USGA qualifiers.
Overrated, underrated.
I would say underrated. I think 36 is too much. Just do 18.
I hate 18.
You like 36?
Well, I just think that it's all chance at 18. You know, like here the thing I always like
that,
playing.
That's good for me. I want the chance. I don't want to have to go back out in the afternoon if I actually play a good round.
My like favorite tournament of the year that I actually play in usually is like the State Am. I didn't play this year because I just don't have the time. But I like it because like I don't feel like I have to, like, you know, like if I make a six, I'm okay. You know,
in
I know
36. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Like I got all this time. I got time to work it. Like you're building like a foundation of the house instead of like just like it's just a sprint, you know. But well, I don't like 36.
The longer
it goes,
the worse it is for my golf game. So I prefer anything on the shorter end.
All right. Next one, your hat collection.
I would say probably overrated. I have a lot of really good golf hats. I also have a lot of really not great golf hats. And I also in my collection have an assortment of non-golf hats. But
how many do you have?
I've probably got 50 awesome golf hats.
What's your like storage situation? I've got a little problem right now. My wife's been on my ass about it.
Yeah, so I have this is kind of funny. I have like where I do my podcast from, it's a room in our house that's my golf room. So this is a room of just golf shit. Clubs, hats, shoes, and then my little podcast studio's in there. The closet has jackets and golf balls and all that crap. So she doesn't go in. I mean, my wife doesn't go in there. I mean, she doesn't open the door. It's like that closet in Friends that Monica had locked. Like, she will not go in that room to save her life because she knows that it's just my just over obsessive, stupid, overflowed hat situation. And she'd prefer not to go in there and see it because she's very, very clean and organized. So that's the good thing, is I can keep it kind of off eyes for most people.
All right. I need a golf room. I need to get one more room in our place.
You build on a golf room. Your wife's like, leaves you. She's like, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah, I don't think she would let me do it either way. It would still have to be spec'd out to her aesthetics. All right, I'm hoping you can give me a good answer here. It's failed miserably every time I ask this. Any sort of music question. Overrated, underrated. We're going to go with Tom Petty.
Oh, man. I think I'm going to go overrated.
Huh? Interesting.
What would you go?
I don't know. That's why I asked. I asked
well,
the question
to you. I would say that Tom Petty has, for the general public, 3 songs that people know. Would that be fair?
Yeah, like Last Dance. I mean, he's got probably 3. Learning to Fly, American Girl. Yeah, probably 3, maybe 4.
So 3 songs that people know, and then most of his good stuff is the things nobody knows. I always kind of think about music like this. if I want to listen to music by myself, then I can listen to whatever I want. But if I'm going to like put a record on or something and it's Tom Petty, I'm going to be told to change it probably within 10 minutes of people being like at my house. I'll be like, can we put something else on? So sorry, Tom Petty.
See, I disagree. I think you could listen to Tom Petty any kind of mood. You could be hanging out. Maybe not partying. There are certain songs like that electric feel. You know that song? MGMT.
Right.
Like, you could listen to that song in any setting. Like, you know, I could start to...
I like how you just compared Tom Petty to... What is it? MGMT?
Yeah. Well, you could listen to... Like, I could replace Comfortably Numb with that song. And I'd be fine, but you could be out at like the bar, like partying, and that song comes on, and you just like everybody starts beating their head to it.
You're right.
Tom Petty has a lot of versatility, so he's underrated.
Okay.
Like, you can't put Led Zeppelin on.
No.
You know? That's like, you gotta be, there's certain bands you gotta be in the right mood. And this,
so what are you, what is your music like, what's your go-to music on the golf course?
It all depends on what my mood's been lately. Sometimes, you know, I can listen to all genres of music.
I have a rule on music on a golf course. I always tell people, like, if I'm riding in a cart, like if I'm playing in something with a cart, I always tell whoever's riding with me, they can pick the artist. Like, I'm like, you pick the artist and I'll put the music on. So I allow the person that's with me to have the music choice, so they're comfortable, because I'll listen to anything.
Yeah.
But I've basically completely moved away from any sort of hip hop or rap on the golf course, because it's just a little too inappropriate in case you run into somebody on another hole. I always hate having to turn the music down because I'm nervous they're going to say a word that the person wouldn't be comfortable hearing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I could do country. I could do classic rock. Classic rock's like usually what, if I was going to put music on the course, I would put classic rock on. Like,
are you not a music on the golf course guy?
I am. I had like the speaker. I lost it though. It all depends. I like listen. Like, if I'm playing by myself, I'll listen to music for sure. You know, like, it all depends. It's all circumstantial. I like love listening to music. I'm a huge music fan. I love golfing. Like, it's two of my favorite things. One of my most memorable rounds of golf in my life ever happened the one time I was in Arizona. And it was at Talking Stick. They had that music festival going on at Talking Stick. You know that thing?
And you could, and you could hear all the music the whole round?
Yeah, I was playing. It was like the sun was coming down, and I was listening to like a band that I really liked. And they were playing, I was listening to them play their concert while I was playing Talking Stick. It was like a spiritual experience.
I did that, and we had that in New Orleans. They say that there's what's the golf course? They say when the big music festival comes through New Orleans, which, I mean, there's probably a music festival every week, but they say there's a course there that you can
Audubon
hear.
Park?
No, it's not Audubon, because it's right there in the middle. It's one of the ones outside that actually got washed out. I should probably know the name of it. But they said that you can hear the music clearly the entire round of golf. And I was like, that sounds like something I'd be very interested in being a part of.
There should be a golf course that has like a music festival on it.
Yeah, just in the middle of it.
While you play.
Yeah.
That would be sick.
I'd pay $300 for that ticket.
That'd be so cool.
Why don't we organize this? Just get like three bands. You know, it's like,
yeah, Iration. We'll get Mike Iration.
This could be our golf event. Is we just like, we have three bands that are just going to be playing music all day, and you play your golf.
Yeah, and you just find a course that's got like a big open space in the middle of it.
I mean, I think you're onto something.
Yeah, yeah, we just solved, you know, best golf event of the year. All right, I'm going to let you go. We've talked for way too long, and I hope that some poor soul isn't listening at this point.
yours tend to go long, but I can stick around for a good amount of them. A pleasure. I always love getting a chance to chat with you.
What do you got anything coming up?
I'm doing PGA Tour Live. I've got a golf trip to Michigan with three buddies. After
where are you
that.
Going?
We're going to do the Loop. We're going to do, I don't really know. Honestly, can I tell you this? I don't really know what my itinerary is.
The Loop's sick.
But it's like three of my best friends and myself are going up there, and we're gonna do I think we're doing 4 or 5 days of golf. Are we? Is there a place that we need to play?
You should try and play Belvedere in Charlevoix.
Is it awesome?
Yeah, super. It's under the radar, semi-private, but they allow public.
It's called Belvedere.
Like yeah, it's a Willie Watson. Yeah, it's a Willie Watson course.
Let me tell you. I'm going to tell you where we're playing right now, just so you can tell me if we're doing it right. Have you played Bay Harbor?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
It's cool. I mean, it's like right on the water.
I'm playing Belvedere.
Belvedere's on there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Impressive.
I'm playing the Loop.
And Forest Dunes, probably too.
I'm playing Forest Dunes. I'm playing Boyne Highlands.
All right. I played at AJGA there back in the day.
And Kingsley Club.
Oh, Kingsley Club's awesome. That's where I got ejected when I started hitting the ball good because I started going at too many flags. That place is cool.
So that's a good lineup. Are you excited about it?
Great lineup. Yeah. You got
and
good
then we're going to have to go to Texas because I've had more people from my hometown in a day of Twitter interaction send me stuff than at almost any time in my career. Are you really going to come? Are we going to play here? You should play here. Have you been here? Have you thought about this place?
Yeah. I know. We got to do the I can't even remember what I called it.
Explorations. We'll do Pine Dunes, Texarkana Country Club. I'll take you to Marshall Lakeside Country Club, which is where I grew up. It's a 9-hole course. I would love to hear your architectural talk on it. And then I'll take you to this place in Shreveport, Louisiana called Herbie K's for dinner. And they have this thing called the Shrimp Buster. That's pounded fried shrimp and a huge cold beer and etouffee.
Sounds great.
And then we'll play Southern Trace and we'll go play Dallas.
Yeah. All right. I just got to block a week off.
I've already got people. My dad, who you've met, is in. He's all excited already.
Porter wants in.
Porter's going to be in. So, Porter's got like 13 kids. I'm not sure if he can make it, but I'd love if he does.
He can't make it. You know, we'd have to get an Oklahoma State legend to join, and then he would be there in a second.
Exactly. You know what? We'll get our boy. We'll get Victor to come play.
Yeah, Victor or just some. We got to get somebody from. I remember he was doing a podcast with Tony Allen when I saw him at Trinity Forest. I was talking to him. He's like, I got Tony Allen coming. I'm like, Tony Allen? He's a Chicago guy, but he's Oklahoma State legend.
Love it. I love it. Well, thanks for having me on.